Going Linux, Episode 52, Computer America, Number 9. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish 3 episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 9th appearance on the Computer America show.
America show, it's the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday. Yes, the 16th of December 2008. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
And do you have a good weekend, Carrie?
Good meaning relaxing and enjoyable? No. But good meaning working on the house and being frustrated? Yes.
There you go. Well, listen, I don't know about working on the house, but I went to see The Day the Earth Stood Still. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed it. It was really, really good, as I knew I was going to.
I was planning to go to the movies this weekend.
Yeah.
Because I was planning to go last weekend, but I couldn't get around to it, and I didn't get around to it this weekend either.
Well, you wanted to see Transporter 3, right? So, but
I did end up seeing Transporter 3.
And
you know, these Transporter movies, he's just not taking it seriously anymore. I like Transporter 1.
Yeah.
Transporter 2, they really stretch the believability, and Transporter 3, it's like they just don't even care anymore. I mean, he's got this Audi, right? This Audi.
Yeah. Audi.
Audi. Yeah. And he Auto Union. Anyway, it's I forget what it stands for. The lead guy, you know, Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Kicks through the driver window.
Okay.
Right, and the next scene, the driver window is back in place in shiny England. He drives it off a bridge into a river, and there's no damage to the car whatsoever.
Well, that's called continuity.
He inflates these things out of the trunk, and it raises the car out of the river.
Yeah.
And they crank the water out of the engine, start it back up, and he drives it again. And it looks like it just came out of the car wash. The seats aren't wet. The inside's not wet.
That's continuity, and the continuity people obviously didn't do a very good job.
No, I think they did a very good job as far as Audi is concerned, because their car looks like it's indestructible, and it has parts that grow back on their own, apparently. If you break a window, it grows back.
Okay. Well, let me tell
you, this is the same complaint I've got about the I Am Legend, where he's driving these old cars that should be dusty and dirty, and they look shiny and clean. Like, what, he's got a car wash over there, or what?
Well, I got to tell you, look, The Day the Earth Stood Still, I saw it. I was a big fan of the 1951 classic, black and white, with Michael Rennie.
1951,
that's when it came out. Yeah, exactly. That's 56 years or whatever. All the actors in that movie are more than likely dead, except maybe the child actors and people very, very young, and they're probably all in their 60s now, too. So, but it was the classic. I enjoyed this immensely. The new movie sort of follows the storyline. It has some differences, which is to be expected. It's been modernized, of course, the way that they do things. But the 51 movie was cheesy in comparison with the special effects, what they had available back then.
Sure.
But you have to take that into account. Still, what I did is after I saw it, my wife and I saw it, she had never seen the picture, and then she had never seen the original. So after she saw the movie, we went back, and I had recorded the 1951 classic, and I had her watch, and I said, which one did you like better? And she said, well, basically, what I'm just saying, you know, it's just today's movies with the CGI and, you know, all the computer graphics and then special effects, these older movies can't compete. Still, the story was a good story, and it's a solid story. It varies slightly in the new movie. The storyline changes a little bit, but, you know, it's fairly true to the story. And I just enjoyed it. Very good acting. Kathy Bates. They got some class actors in there. Of course, Keanu Reeves, whom I like as an actor. I think that all that was done very well. And I give it 2 thumbs up. So there you go.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I was in a mood. I had this movie for a long time, and I just never gotten around to watch it. And last night I finally sat down to watch it because I felt like it was something I could relate to. And it's a movie with John Cusack, and it's called Martian Child.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Yeah, I've seen this.
And it's like the kid doesn't fit into society. Yeah, he's a little weird. And John Cusack doesn't fit into size. You know, when he was growing up, he felt awkward. And it's based on a true story. It's based on a true story. And he turns out to become a very successful science fiction author. And he adopts a child who is weird. And he recognizes that. You know, he sees it. And the kid's like way weirder than I ever was or the character in the movie ever was. I mean, this kid's out there. It was a very enjoyable movie, and there you go. There's my recommendation. If you want to rent a DVD, then you've always felt like you're somebody who doesn't fit in, check out Martian Child.
Yeah, all right, good enough.
It's a little bit of a tearjerker.
Yeah, there's.
But it's a happy movie. But
there, so you're a thumbs down for Transporter 3. I got 2 thumbs up for The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Look, Transporter 3. If you want to go in and just have a good time, and you don't want to think. Mm-hmm. Like a video game.
Got it.
Rent it on DVD one night, but don't spend $9 or $10 to see it at a theater.
Okay, you got it. All right. Well, this is, of course, the third Tuesday of the month. And every third Tuesday of the month, we do devote the entire show to Linux. The Linux operating system, of course, continues to become more and more popular, especially in the wake of Microsoft's latest Windows iteration, Vista. We've talked about all kinds of subjects, if Linux is right for you, and, you know, are you burning any bridges, and where do you start? Well, we devote the entire show to Linux on the third Tuesday. If you have a Linux question, tonight is the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America.
Hey, thanks for having me here again.
There you go. So did you see The Day the Earth Stood Still?
No, I haven't seen it yet. My problem is I tend to wait until they come on.
No, you can't do that. You know
why? I know.
Now, first of all, some movies just need to be seen on IMAX screens. This is one. This is an IMAX or in 3D.
I have a 65-inch.
Nah, it's not like an IMAX. It's not the same. You need to go see it in the theater. Yeah.
That's right. You don't have crying babies, ringing cell phones, blinking Bluetooth earpieces, lighting up the theater, sticky floors, $8 tubs of popcorn.
My wife and I went there, and the theater was not crowded at all. It was nice, and it's a very comfortable seating, and it was just really a nice
experience. Well, if I lived in the sticks, I would probably be the same way. But if you live in a major metropolitan area.
Sticks. I love it. All right, so there you go.
Greg,
so,
before we get into Linux, I have a question on The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
Did the infamous phrase, Klaatu Barada Nikto, come up?
No, they did.
I am disappointed. I'm not going to watch the movie.
No. Gort actually...
Larry is a man of principle, and I admire that.
Gort takes on a much different role than in the 51 classic. It's different. I say that there's some differences. You know, first of all, it's not a man in a silver robot suit, okay? You know, I mean, And it takes a different totally different role, really, than what it is in. It's sort of similar, but it's very different. You just gonna have to, I don't want to give anything away. You just have to go see it. Okay.
Okay. Well, with that review, you've intrigued me. I'll go see it.
Yeah, go see it because it is different. It follows the storyline to a point, but then it varies. And if you're, I just don't want to tell you what it is, but the bottom line is it's still the overall message is sort of there in the new one. Okay, so that's
okay.
It. But it's delivered in a different manner. Okay, so that's so you did
that's
see
the movie review.
So,
for that.
Yeah, so, well, we always have those. You did
yes,
see the
I know.
You know the 51 classic. You saw the original then, obviously.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Great movie.
I don't think Carrie
but
saw
you're
it.
You're right.
Carrie, did you see it? Did you see the original?
No.
Okay, you haven't. Okay, well, you should rent it. Or you don't need to do that. You know, all the Sci-Fi Channel, all these people are playing it.
Yeah, my free time. I'll do that in my free time.
Or just record it. Yeah, time shift it and watch it. All right, so tonight, we see, what Larry always does is kind of he picks for like a topic for the month. And there's an overall theme here, and we're going to talk about different things. But the theme for this for tonight in Linux is Linux for the Holidays. There you go, just the Linux for the Holidays. So, Linux for the Holidays, exactly. So how does Linux tie into the holidays?
Well, it has to do with today's tough economic times.
Okay.
And, you know, the holidays is a time for gift giving, and oftentimes people feel that they have to go out and buy something absolutely brand new for the holidays, and that's to give it away as a gift. And mm-hmm. you can certainly do that, but one thing I would like to suggest is if you are a little economically strapped, if you've got a lot sunk into the stock market and it's not quite earning what it used to earn you, you might want to consider your options, and rather than go out and buy that brand new shiny computer you can get them for under $500 these days, but still, if you have a very serviceable computer, you could download a live CD of Linux and breathe new life into it. And if you have a student who needs a computer for school and it's acting up a little bit or whatever, maybe they've got viruses on it or spyware and it's just bogged down and slow, replace that Windows operating system with Linux and give it to them as a gift for the holidays. And it can be, you know, a much less expensive gift that way. Another way, if you do want to buy a brand new shiny computer, buy one with Linux on it. Dell sells them. System 76 sells them. There are plenty of vendors out there who are selling brand new computers with Linux on them, tweaked for that particular hardware and guaranteed to run.
All right. Now,
what about these netbooks, Larry? I think that a lot of people are going to be buying them thinking they've got a cheap Windows computer, only to learn it's got Linux and be frustrated and return it to the store.
Well, if you're looking for a netbook and you aren't sure, look at the packaging, ask the people at the counter, and if you want Windows, make sure they sell you one with Windows on it. Most of the netbooks are available with Windows on them. The less expensive ones are the ones with Linux on them. And generally speaking, they put the Linux on the less powerful machines. Certainly not that it won't run on the more powerful machines.
It's all about price.
It's about price, but it's also about the fact that Windows won't run on the less powerful machines. Windows...
Well, wait a minute. It will run... Well, it'll crawl. You're right.
It'll
it won't
crawl.
Run.
Exactly.
But,
it'll
I mean,
crawl.
How we use the word run. It will... I don't like that word run. It will operate, but it will operate very slowly. It will not be running by any means, stretch of the means.
One frame per minute.
When you're dealing with limited or older hardware, but especially with newer computers, the netbooks often have lower spec processors and smaller hard drives and things like that. And as a result, the ones with the lower specifications, the ones that run a little bit slower anyway, won't take... Windows. They just won't run it at any reasonable speed. And it runs just fine with Linux, and that's why they put Linux on those, is so that they can sell them at a less expensive price point for those people who are looking for a netbook but really don't have the big bucks to spend on the netbook. And if you really like Linux and you want to buy one with the higher specs, the larger hard drives and the faster processors, and you want that netbook, you can dual boot into Linux as well, or just replace Windows on it with Linux if you like.
Okay.
I'll tell you what we'll do. I'd like to come back when we come back and address some of these emails we've got, because we've got a bunch of them to get to tonight.
We do.
All right. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. We're talking all Linux tonight. It's the third Tuesday of the month with Larry Bushy. We'll continue on with our Linux expert right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. And by the way, when you go to the Computer America website, don't forget to look at our links page. There's always something going on in there. And for example, we've recently added two new links from Nero. If you click on a banner, one of those banners, you'll see Nero's best-selling multimedia suite, Nero 9, that allows you to easily create and finish photo, video, audio, and music projects. With over 20 applications, Nero 9 provides you with everything you need to complete your digital media tasks, even in high definition, easily at home, on the go, and online. I know Carrie has been using it for years. And also, click on the link to see the latest from Nero. That's their Liquid TV PC that puts you in control of when, where, and how you watch TV. It turns your PC into a DVR. It uses the award-winning TiVo interface that lets you watch live TV directly on your PC. You can set it to automatically record your favorite shows to your hard drive, then watch your content on any computer or TV in your home network. And here's something you can't do with the TiVo. You can export your shows to an iPod, PlayStation Portable, or just burn it to a DVD. So whether you're at home, at the office, or on the go, Nero's Liquid TV PC is the next generation DVR experience fit for today's digital life. Go to ComputerAmerica.com, click on our links button, and you'll see both of the Nero banners right there for you to click upon. Larry Bushy is with us here at the Computer America Show tonight. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and we're doing all Linux. And if you want to join in on the conversation, you can. It's real simple. You can call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. 8255. That number will get you on and get you through. You can send us an email to us at live, that's L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. If you have a question but you don't want to go on the air, well, that's a great way to do it. Or you can join us in our chat room. The way that works is you go to the Computer America homepage, computeramerica.com. On the left side of the screen there, it'll says chat with us. Pick a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go in there. Click the join button in your Java-enabled browser. Be on a Windows machine, PC, Mac, Vista, Linux, it all works. So we'll move you into the chat room where our guest tonight, Larry Bushy, is also participating. His screen name in there is Going Linux - Larry. So we were just before the break, Carrie, you were about to ask Larry something?
Yeah, well, we've got a ton of emails to get to. And I
right, emails,
start
right.
Sure. By addressing some of these emails tonight. I guess we'll start at the beginning, right?
That's a good place to start.
And Larry, you can answer it. How's that?
Okay, that makes sense.
Roy C. in Canada writes, "Hi, guys. Unfortunately, Larry made a mistake when he said that Wubi allows you to install many distributions, but he recommended that the man with vision problems install Ubuntu because it allowed him to take advantage of a screen reader. The U in Wubi stands for Ubuntu. Wubi is W-U-B-I, Windows Ubuntu Installer. You can install Ubuntu, Zubuntu, Mythbuntu, and Kubuntu using Wubi, but not other distributions. I know it's hard to come up with helpful comments and be 100% accurate, but I know that you would want to correct this misinformation. You don't want people to think that Wubi will install a non-canonical distribution. Larry, you do a great job on Computer America. Keep it up. You are a great resource and introduction to Linux for the uninformed. Cheers, Roy from Linux. Linux Canuck. It's a Linux Canuck.
Yeah, he signs it the Linux Canuck. Well, and thanks, Roy, for those kind words. And you are absolutely right. I did make a mistake. Wubi is an installer that installs the Ubuntu variety of Linux and the various variants that he mentioned in his email there. And just for our listeners who haven't been listening, and if you haven't, why not? The Wubi installer is something that allows you to install Ubuntu Linux on your Windows computer, and it installs just like a regular Windows application. You put in the CD, you launch the installer, it installs it, you reboot once, and from then on you have a choice as to whether or not you want to run Ubuntu or Windows. And you can switch between the two by rebooting your computer. And if you decide, Ubuntu's not for me, you can uninstall it from the Windows control panel like any other software program. It's kind of like magic.
I used it a while back. I have no complaints. It was a great introduction. I had issues with drivers, but I liked the idea that it was, I didn't have to do any formatting or things like that to my hard drive or change my configuration. It made it very easy to try Linux out.
Yeah, and it's a lot less intimidating for someone who had never partitioned a hard drive or some of the other scary things that people talk about when installing Linux on a computer.
All right, well, we got lots more emails, and we'll continue to read those and answer your questions. It is an all-Linux night, and we will continue to pursue that topic. Also, Linux for the holidays, and your emails. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It's all Linux tonight. We'll be right back. This is Computer America. And you're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's an all-Linux show tonight, both hours. Larry Bushy is our Linux expert. He continues on with us, and we were reading an email from, I think, Roy.
Roy.
Right, exactly. And then there's also another link here, Kerry. And you
yeah, just, yeah, Brian W., is a visually impaired regular listener and provided a link to a website with a short comment that basically it's called Vibuntu 1.0. It's a customized version of Ubuntu for visually impaired users with a link. Now, that is in our show notes if you're a visually impaired listener of the show and you want to try out a Linux version, Vibuntu. I guess that's how you say that.
Yeah, I think it's Vibuntu or Vibuntu or who knows how to pronounce it, but VI for visually impaired, Buntu for Ubuntu. And I checked into it a little bit, and if you go to the link, it is a distribution that's based on Ubuntu, but it's been tweaked for the visually impaired. Now, I have to say that Ubuntu is one of the distributions that comes pre-installed with the Orca screen reader, which is a critical component for someone who's visually impaired. And we have a number of visually impaired listeners to the Going Linux podcast, and this particular listener who sent us this email is just one of them. And that's one of the reasons I'm sure why he sent us this link, is to highlight the fact that there's a distribution specifically for the visually impaired. Now, the Ubuntu distribution, and I'm sure this variant of it, the Vibuntu or whatever it is kind of unique in that it starts the installer in a text mode where you can actually start the Orca screen reader as you're installing it, and then as you boot into the operating system, the Orca screen reader is starting right away, as opposed to having to boot into it blind, no pun intended, and then start up the screen reader however you would normally do that. And many visually impaired users will use the command line simply because, you know, it's text-based and a screen reader can handle that very nicely. But I imagine from reading the review on the Vibuntu distribution that they have optimized it with a number of applications and utilities specifically designed for the visually impaired. Looking at it, they've taken out some of the some applications to make room for that on the CD. Of course, you can install them back in again if you like, but they've taken out things like the GIMP, which is a graphical image manipulation program, and a photo manager, and they've been very careful to tailor this for the visually impaired.
Very nice. Okay, hey, listen, we're just going to break for 60 seconds, and we'll continue on with this. We've got a lot more emails to read, and we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or, of course, our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back into the Computer America Show, 40 minutes after the hour. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We're broadcasting coast-to-coast on radio stations around this great country and around the entire world
yeah.
at ComputerAmerica.com. Now, we're talking...
One giant red dot now on that map thing that we have.
Well, the maps over at ComputerAmerica.com show you where, if you scroll down to the bottom of ComputerAmerica.com, you'll see where visitors to ComputerAmerica.com are arriving from in the United, in the entire world. And it shows little red dots around the different countries and continents. And it's becoming the second largest thing on there next to the ocean, which is really great. So we're talking this entire show. This is dedicated to Linux. This is our last Linux show of the year as we approach the, well, we go on hiatus on Friday. So enjoy these few live shows that we've got left. And, of course, a great time to get caught up on older Computer America shows. And don't forget, while we're on hiatus, it's a great time for you to go check out the Computer America archives. You can go back couple of years.
That's right.
Other Linux shows when we had Marcel Gagné on, or other shows of maybe products you didn't hear about, or perhaps celebrities and guests that we've had on that you may have missed, from Ed Begley Jr. to Thomas Dolby to Will Wheaton. They've all been here. And joining us tonight, like I said, all Linux, we're talking with Larry Bushy. He has his own podcast, the Going Linux podcast. If you want to learn more about that as well, what a great time to get caught up and to check out Larry's podcast while we're on hiatus and learn more about Linux over at goinglinux.com. Hmm. Now, we're going through reading some emails. Craig, you want to read the next one?
Sure. This is from James D. in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he says, hi, guys. It says, in an email read on the last Computer America episode, someone asked why there was antivirus in the Linux repositories when Linux doesn't need antivirus since there are no Linux viruses in the wild. The answer is that these days antivirus on a Windows box is useful as a, quote, coal mine canary. I love that analogy. And if you're not familiar with that, that's when the days before they had, they would just take a live canary and put it in a cage and just on a stick and hold it in front of them.
And if
the canary passed out from the gas, because it was very sensitive to gas, it would keel over first, that we know immediately, oh, we better not go in there, let's get out of here because there's gas in here. So it was like an early warning alert. Anyway, it says...
It sounds like something the Flintstones would do.
No, but it was quite effective.
I know, it's real.
Yeah. Well, it says, the answer is that these days antivirus in a Windows box is useful as a coal mine canary. When the antivirus starts acting strange by either disappearing or by not being able to update, it's time to back up, format, restore. If the virus actually gets inside your box, you're hosed. So the proper way to prevent virus infections is with something that blocks viruses before they get to the Windows box, a security gateway. Since security gateway devices usually run Linux, there's antivirus software for blocking Windows viruses in the Linux repositories in case you want to build your own router, DNS, server, firewall, gateway. And that was a comment from James D. in Raleigh, North Carolina. Larry, do you concur?
Yes, I do. In fact, I know, Carrie, you had sent me an email earlier on this week or late last week, I forget now, but
yes.
You had somebody asking, can the Linux antivirus that is available in those repositories detect Windows viruses? And I thought that this email from James kind of tied in with that one. And yes, the Linux antivirus does, in fact, find Windows viruses. And there are, I understand, maybe a half dozen or so, maybe a little bit more of Linux viruses that have existed, but they don't last very long. And the whole idea behind having an antivirus in Linux is just that, the analogy of the coal mine canary. But in addition to that, you might want a Linux antivirus on your machine as a regular user. Certainly, you know, those folks who run servers may be serving to other Windows computers and may want antivirus on there to protect those Windows computers. But if you're just an average Linux desktop user, why would you want to run an antivirus? Well, it is primarily to protect those of your friends who are running Windows on their systems. So if, for example, you have a Windows virus that comes into your Linux machine as on an email, you are insulated from that virus because, first of all, it's probably an executable that runs only on Windows. It'll end in a .exe, or it'll have other another extension or be another type of file that only runs that's only designed to run on Windows. So it won't hurt you. But if you forward that email on to someone who is running Windows, you could pass that virus on to them. If you're running an antivirus in your Linux machine, it will catch that virus, clean the virus from the email, so that when you forward it on to your Linux non-Linux running friends, they don't catch that virus.
That's so good. You know, that was
very nice.
It was a great question that a caller, and I never really thought about it before, but he said, you know, what if I forward an email and it has a Windows virus? Is my Linux antivirus going to clean it, or am I potentially sending my Windows friends viruses? And we really didn't have an answer for them. But, you know, I default back to my boilerplate answer, which is it's up to each one of us to protect ourselves. We can't rely on other people to scan their emails any more than we can rely on them to have car insurance. You know, we have to protect ourselves.
Right.
And it's good to know that cleans it out, but the bottom line is, even if it doesn't, if you don't infect them and they're not running antivirus, they're going to get infected by somebody else and quickly. So,
yeah, that's right. You know. And even if there was a Linux virus that was transmitted by email, it's unlikely that it would pass through. First of all, if you're running behind a router, it's still going to get in there because it's delivered by email, but. One of the things that a virus would have to do to infect a Linux computer, first, you would have to read the email, of course. You would have to save the attachment in Linux because it won't run from within the email. You can't run it from within the email because primarily it would be a type of file that wouldn't – it would be an executable file, and you would have to – after detaching it, you would have to give it permission to run as an executable program before it would run, and then you would have to consciously go and run. You would have to work at giving yourself this virus, even if it were a Linux virus. So that's one of the reasons why I say that the structure of Linux itself, the way it's designed, helps prevent you from getting a virus, even if it is a Linux virus. So the antiviruses out there are more to protect your Windows buddies than they are to protect you as a Linux user.
Hmm.
And
good to know.
Yeah, well, it will include some links in the show notes to some of the antiviruses that are available for Linux, and there are several of them out there. Some of the most popular ones are ClamAV. ClamAV will also run on Windows, I understand. There's another one called fprot for fprot.
Unfortunately, the ClamAV that runs on Windows does not run actively, so you have to manually scan. And if you're not diligent, it's very easy to have a virus. And if you don't manually scan, it's not for everybody. It's just for the geekiest of the geeks. For the Windows, ClamAV for Windows.
Fprot fits into that category as well. But AVG, the folks at AVG make a Linux version as well. You know, the Windows version is version 8.0 something. The 7.5 is what they're on for the Linux version. So don't feel that you're behind having a 7.5 version of AVG for Linux. It's still freeavg.com that you go to, and just look for the Linux version on their site there. There's an openantivirus.org as well, and something called Sophos, S-O-P-H-O-S. I think that runs on Linux and Windows as well. So there are several of them out there for sure.
All right, well, we're going to break again. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com with the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll be right back after these words. Stay tuned for more Computer America. It's all Linux tonight. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com. or our chat room at computeramerica.com. It's really busy in the chat room tonight. People dropping in, dropping out, and visiting. A lot of new people in there as well. Always like to see new faces in there. Well, we don't see the face. We see new usernames, but, you know, the virtual faces. Larry Bushy continuing on with us this hour and moving into the next hour as well. just want to mention our buddy list winner of the week is Bobby Sledge. Bobby wins the Logitech Wave keyboard. Congratulations, Bobby. And also, he wins a copy of PC Tools Internet Security Suite. And that's PC Tools all-in-one security suite featuring their award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And get this, when we get a call, an email, a feedback, or chat room visit from someone who's outside of North America, that person will receive a copy of PC Tools' latest version of Spyware Doctor. They get the actual program. That's very, very cool. We want to thank our sponsor, PC Tools, for that. So, again, congratulations to Bobby Sledge. And if you want to win some great prizes, we give away those two terrific prizes every Friday. We have a buddy list winner announced. It's real easy. Just make sure that you're signed up to our buddy list. It's right there on the homepage at computeramerica.com. It says get on our buddy list. You just put in your first and last name, your email address, and click the join button. You'll get an email back making sure that it is, in fact, you who wants to be on the buddy list. It's a double opt-in system. You just have to do a reply, click reply to that email, and you're on. When you're on the buddy list, you get the weekly show reminder delivered fresh and piping hot into your email inbox every Monday, and it's the only place that you can find or read up on the entire lineup of shows for that week, who's going to be on the show, what the topics discussed will be. It's all in the show reminder. So get on the buddy list, get a chance to win some great prizes. Again, even though this Friday's the last show of the year, we will be announcing yet another buddy list winner. Right now, Larry Bushy continues on with us here on the Computer America Show. It's all Linux. It's the third Tuesday of the month. We continue to do Linux. We're too close to the end of the first hour to really get into the next email. Larry, do you have anything else that you want to talk about before we get to the next? Because we got about a minute and a half.
Yeah, I think we've talked a lot about Linux viruses and Windows viruses, and I think it's a very important topic, and we should probably talk a little bit more about it after the break and when we come back. But let me just say that our next episode on Going Linux is a follow-up to the introduction to networking in Linux that we had a couple of episodes ago. And it will be an advanced version where we will be talking about how to actually make those software connections between your Linux computers on a network, between Linux and Windows, and between Windows and Linux, sharing files, sharing printers, and all things networking.
Ooh, okay. So now, and where can people go to hear that?
The website is goinglinux.com, and we have a homepage there. We have show notes, we have articles, and you can send us emails as well at goinglinux@gmail.com.
All right. Well, we got another full hour of the Computer America Show as we continue on our All Linux All Night program. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after your local and national news for another full hour of Linux on the Computer America Show. Stay with us.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And if you're just joining us, we are in our all Linux mode for tonight. The third Tuesday of every month is we devote the entire show to the subject of Linux. It's an important operating system, and we certainly think that it needs to be spoken about and talked about and questions answered. And to do that, we have our Linux expert, Larry Bushy, here. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry continues on with us into this hour. Hey, Larry.
And
hey. Now, just before the break, we finished up some of the emails, and I want to continue on with that and some of the other topics. If you want to join in, by the way, you can toll-free 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That number will get you on, get you through. Email live at computeramerica.com or our chat room at computeramerica.com. So, Kerry, should we go to the next email here or what?
Yeah, let's we're moving along. Actually, no, but Larry actually mentioned you want to talk a little bit more about the malware virus situation?
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay, yeah.
Or do you want to move on from that?
Well, I think the next email is about that. So why don't we just go into that?
Okay.
Well, in that case, do you want to read it?
Yeah, no, this is, I don't know, it might be a little hot if you notice where it's from.
you'll get the joke in a minute.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, who wants to read it?
I'll read it. Larry reads it.
All right, Larry, you go ahead and read it.
Okay. This is from Alexandro in Tabasco, Mexico.
Oh.
There's the joke. There. Now, Alexandro is a regular listener to the Going Linux podcast, and he also listens to the Computer America show, of course.
That's a name.
yeah, absolutely. And Alexander happens to be the lead of the OpenOffice.org community for the Spanish language.
Aye.
And we've talked about OpenOffice.org on the show before. Mm-hmm. It's an open source alternative to Microsoft Office. And so Alexandro has written into the show before, to the Going Linux show before. I think this is the first time he's written in related to Computer America.
Uh-huh.
But he writes, "Hi, guys. I have used Linux for 8 years as a system administrator and a developer. I have also been with many security experts on the Unix/Linux world. There is substantial reason why a virus or malware is not really a threat to Linux." He continues, "Viruses are usually scripts that will run and turn your PC either into a zombie or destroy your documents. The thing is that scripts need to get into your system to break your system. However, these scripts are usually .exe or .vbs, as I was mentioning before.
Right.
Linux would simply ignore these files since it doesn't recognize .exe or .vbs. Finally, most Linux attacks happen on Linux servers, which are open to the world and could be subject to attacks. End users don't usually run servers unless they want to become system administrators. They will never get an attack since with desktop Linux, they are not even open on the Internet."
Wow.
So the point I'd like to make here is that although Linux itself doesn't recognize .exe or .vbs file extensions and won't run them, there are ways to run Windows programs in Linux. There are a couple things that come to mind. One is a program called Wine, which stands for Wine is not an emulator, but essentially it emulates, not really, sort of, Windows, and will run Windows programs, some Windows programs. There's another variant of that called Crossover, which does the same sort of thing. And if you are running those Windows environments within Linux, they can run .exe programs and .vbs programs and other programs, and your Wine or Crossover can catch a virus just as though it were running in Linux. I mean, excuse me, running in Windows. What am I saying? So you do need to be careful if you're running one of those things. And in fact, you can run Internet Explorer under Linux using Wine or Crossover, and the same sort of problems that you get with Internet Explorer in Windows, you would get with Internet Explorer under
Wine or a crossover in Linux. So you really do have to be careful if you're trying to run Windows programs in one of those.
Hmm. All right. So I think that that resolves. He was just basically pointing out. That's kind of nice because you get a lot of the emails that we get on Linux are from people who are familiar with it, and they make corrections. They'd like to point out additional things, which is nice.
Yeah, they make me look smart.
Well, you know, it's nice to get that kind of a participation.
Yeah, we really appreciate all the assistance that the Linux community lends one another, and that's one of the nice things about being part of the Linux community is there's a lot of help from the more experienced people to those people who are just learning about Linux. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I got involved in podcasting in the first place is I was a Windows Power user and still am at work because we run Windows at work, and was always giving folks help and started a podcast giving Windows tips, started using Linux for my own personal use early on, and then decided, well, you know, I don't see too many Linux tip and tricks and assistance podcasts out there. Why don't I start one? So started up with a co-host who got a promotion at work and left the podcast and continue on with Tom, my current co-host. And we spend 3 episodes a month providing folks help with Linux on a podcast and on the website.
Hmm. How many podcasts are you up to now? What show number?
This one will be show number 52.
And it's weekly?
It's 3 times a month. We have somewhere around the 5th of the month, we have a listener feedback episode where we've collected all the emails from the previous month that we haven't talked about on the Computer America show. And then Computer America, of course, is the third Tuesday of every month, and sometimes that happens before, sometimes that happens after the other episode that we have, which is usually around the 20th of the month, and that's our user experience episode, we call it. And we usually take a couple of months to cover a topic in depth. We do an introductory episode on the first month, and so that's what we did last month for networking. We talked about how to what kind of hardware you need to network. So we talked about a router. We talked about how to connect your router to your internet modem and how to connect it to your computer. And then the next month we go into a little more depth. And so for networking, that's where we'll start talking about how do you configure CUPS, which is the printer driver software, if you will. Not really a driver, but it's how you set
CUPS?
Up printer sharing. Yes.
Why is it called CUPS?
I'm trying to remember what the acronym stands for.
It sounds like something I'd see on a menu at Hooters.
I don't think so, but give me a second and I'll figure it out. But or somebody in the chat
just
room
threw me with that.
We'll figure it out real quick. But it's a common Unix printing system is what it stands for. And it's how you share printers across networks when you're talking about Unix or Linux and Windows and Mac in a network environment. So it's something that you'll find in a corporate network very easily if there's anything more than just Windows on it. And sometimes even when there's Windows, when you purchase an HP networked printer, laser printers, or some of the color laser printers that are used by businesses, many of those come with CUPS as part of their firmware for sharing them across the network. So it's become very robust over the years and is used across networks from the days when Unix ran the world, and it's becoming more of a Windows and Linux world these days for servers. But it's still out there. It's still the premier printer sharing system out there. So that's what CUPS is all about.
Let's talk about Linux in the news.
Yeah. IBM
launches
this Microsoft free Linux PC.
Yeah, kind of interesting, huh? Yeah, there was an article in Information Week, and we'll have a link in the show notes to that, I'm sure, where IBM has decided to launch a Microsoft-free Linux PC. And what they're doing is they have their own version of OpenOffice. It's, what is it called now? Oh, it's in this article somewhere, and I can't find it right off the top now. But they have their own version of it, Symfony, that's what it's called. And they've had that for quite a while. It's a little bit tweaked for compatibility with a lot of the IBM and Lotus software. IBM, of course, owns Lotus Notes and the other Lotus-related programs. And so they have this version of OpenOffice that they call Symfony that will be on these computers. The computers will run Linux. And according to the article, they're claiming they can save businesses, which is their target market for this, between $500 and $800 per user just on Microsoft software licenses. And an additional over $200 per user, since there's no need to upgrade hardware to support Windows Vista and Microsoft Office, because the current versions of Windows, like we said at the open of our show here, crawls on some of the older hardware that's out there. So if you've got older hardware and you don't want to spend licenses on upgrading the hardware, or you don't want to spend money on upgrading the hardware and money on additional Windows licenses and Office licenses, then maybe one of these IBM Microsoft free computers is for you.
I would say that being in the news, since we're on the topic of news, although not Linux-related, unless you use this as motivation to try Linux, there's going to be a very important patch issued to Internet Explorer tomorrow, Wednesday. Microsoft's, they're not waiting to the second Tuesday of the month. This is an emergency security patch for all versions of Internet Explorer, and it's considered a critical fix currently plaguing the Internet Explorer browser. More than 2 million computers are believed to have been infected because of this. So if you see that yellow shield appear on your computer tomorrow, please don't hesitate and install that.
Click that right away.
Or get fed up and go and install Linux or Wubi. Tell you what, we're going to take a break. That's what that music means. If you have a question, call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK, or the chat room at computeramerica.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Computer America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
And speaking of being the official radio talk show of CompUSA, I just want to let you know that our CompUSA Computer America contest is on right now, and you should be entered into it. It's very simple. I mean, if you haven't, what are you waiting for? Just go over to computeramerica.com there, and you'll see a really big, fancy, detailed banner. Left-hand side.
That's called sarcasm.
Yes, it is. It just says, the contest, and says click
And that's
here.
What you need to click on it. You
click
need
here
to, click
to enter.
That.
Right, you click right on it, and then it takes it, we spared no expense on that banner. And it takes
none
you,
at all.
Yes, exactly. It takes you to our contest page where we really have outdone ourselves with this contest. We're giving away three terrific prizes, three. And there's going to be two runners-up. The two runners-up, get this, are receiving a Sony VAIO all-in-one TV PC with the Intel Core 2 Duo processor, 3 gigabytes of DDR2 memory, a 320 gigabyte SATA hard drive, a DVD reader burner, a TV tuner, wireless LAN built right in, a 22-inch LCD screen. This is absolutely gorgeous. We're giving away two. And that's just the two runners-up, valued at $1,200. And then the grand prize, are you ready for this? We're giving away a 42-inch high-definition TV and Windows Vista Media Center PC. That is absolutely gorgeous. That's valued at $1,500. So that's it. Just go over there, enter. Just click on the banner, put your full name, email, zip code, and then click the submit button. We're taking entries through January 4th of 2009. That's a Sunday. Then we return to the air on that Monday, January 5th, And then on the Tuesday, the January the 6th, Lonnie Paul, who is the director of e-commerce for CompUSA, will join Carrie and myself on the show, and we will announce the three big winners. And get this, along with each of the three computer systems we're giving away, we will also be including a copy of System Mechanic from Iolo Technologies, the PC tune-up experts. And you can check Iolo out at www.iolo.com. And you can get any of Iolo's products directly from CompUSA.com. So make sure that you are entered to win. You got a great chance of winning. Go over to ComputerAmerica.com and register to win today.
Would you like a 100% chance of winning? Here's how. If you're listening to the Computer America show outside of North America, let us know. Let us know where you're listening to us from. Obviously, we know you're listening over the Internet. We know you're not listening over the radio if you're outside of North America. And by doing so, by sending us that email, letting us know where you are listening to us from outside of North America, you'll receive absolutely for free a copy of PC Tools Spyware Doctor.
That's right.
Just for letting us know.
Yeah, that's how cool
that's
is that?
That's a 100% win.
That's it. Exactly. So we got lots of stuff that we're giving away with a buddy list winner of the week and the contest with CompUSA and then... I mean, it's just all kinds of things that we do here in the Computer America show. And we're, as I said, our last contest of the year is probably one of the biggest contest giveaways we've had so far. And we'll continue on with that as we continue our alliance with CompUSA. Larry Bushy continues on with this. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and it is all Linux for the entire show. We do that traditionally every third Tuesday of the month. And, of course, the big news is that IBM just launched that Microsoft-free Linux PC. How is that being received?
You know, I think it was introduced just at the beginning of the month, so I'm not sure that there's been a lot of reports as to how it's been received yet. So I think we just have to wait a little bit and see how it is received.
Let me rephrase the question. How do you think it will be received?
That was where I was going. You know, I think in the corporate enterprise world, which is where IBM is big, of course, and where they're targeting this thing, if this had been a couple of months ago, I think it would be kind of lukewarm reception, except for those companies who were planning on moving to Linux anyway. There are plenty of good reasons to move to Linux from Windows in a corporate environment, but it hasn't caught on all that much. However, now that we're in this economic downturn and a lot of companies are looking for ways to save money, I know my company is looking for ways to save money without laying people off, which is, of course, one way to save money. And I think because it's IBM and because they're making a big deal of this and because of the economy, I think there's a possibility that they will get quite a few more customers than they would otherwise. I think the other thing that will be pushing companies to think about Linux is the fact that Microsoft itself has an agreement with Novell, one of the publishers of a Linux variety called SUSE Linux, and Microsoft is reselling SUSE Linux licenses. So even Microsoft is selling Linux these days.
Mm. Wow. Which you wouldn't think that would be the case. I mean, but there you go.
No, not at all. I was surprised to hear that when I first heard that quite a few months
ago. I was
almost
speechless. I didn't think I was going to ever hear that happening, but evidently and of course, being Microsoft free does substantially reduce the cost of the computer, does it not?
Well, it does because you don't have to upgrade it. And to keep it current software, and upgrading hardware can become very expensive. But the really big savings is on the licenses. When you license Microsoft Office, for example, and you upgrade from XP to Vista, maybe your old Office 98 doesn't work so well.
There you go. Well. All right, this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us all this hour, and of course the previous hour. It's all Linux. And Larry just forwarded me a news story about a teacher's misguided Linux rant. And
tell us about this, Larry.
Wow. This is just... What planet is she living on? Has she never heard of Linux or what?
I don't know. Well, apparently she has, which is the strange thing. It's an article in Linux Insider, which is an online blog, and unfortunately it doesn't give a link to the original post or to the original source, so I can't verify how much of this is true and how much of it is inflated. But it's an article written by Catherine Noyes of Linux Insider, and looks like she wrote it yesterday, as a matter of fact. Uh-huh. But it talks about the fact that this teacher doesn't identify where the teacher is, might not even be in the United States, identifies her as, in quotes, Karen.
I just want to say that it's got to be an American. It's got to be.
it certainly sounds like it.
No.
But apparently a student was giving away Helios project CDs in the classroom. Helios is a variety of Linux, and had installed it on some of the classroom computers and was giving it away to other students. And the teacher got a little upset at that and wrote a letter to Ken Starks, who is one of the key people at Helios, and said, in quotes, "At this point, I'm not sure what you are doing is legal. No software is free, and spreading that misconception is harmful." Oh. Unquote. Yeah, she also writes that it's holding children back, that if you are doing anything illegal, she's going to pursue it.
She's not heard of open source? I mean, what's going on?
Apparently not, but in the article, she's claimed to have said that she tried Linux during college, and she says, "I assure you the claims you make are grossly overstated and hinge on falsehoods." So, you know, I think these kinds of things are the kinds of things that don't do any good for Linux, obviously, but there may be people out there who haven't heard of Linux. There certainly are a lot of people out there who haven't heard of Linux. And the good news in this kind of story getting out there is it shines a light on the fact that Linux is available, it is free, and there are a lot of misconceptions about it that are highlighted by an article like this. Unfortunately, the article goes on to say that the Linux community kind of got a little hostile over this, and the guy at Helios got a little hostile over it as well.
Understandably, I mean, the accusatorial tone of her attack, there's nothing less than that.
Exactly.
Certainly can raise the ire of even the most mildly pacifist person out there. So I could see that. And even then, they took steps to protect her identity, you know. Hey, this is Computer...
And we're back with the Computer America Show, live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks, talking with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. It's all about Linux this third Tuesday of the month, as it is with every third Tuesday of the month. And we're just talking about, there's no shortage of crazy people, that's for sure.
I'm just reading this last this statement. She writes, "I am sure if you..." She writes this to Helios. "I am sure if you contacted Microsoft, they would be more than happy to supply you with copies of an older version of Windows, and that way your computers would actually be of service to those receiving
them." Well, look, I've said something similar to people thinking about Linux, and that is, if you're an average everyday user who needs, or let's say, you know, a lot of applications that are not available on Linux. Well, first of all, not a lot of applications, because your average ordinary user only uses a very small handful of apps. But let's say one of those apps is AOL. Well, you're going to be out of luck if you want to try and run it on Linux. Now, the world today uses Windows for the desktops and for servers. Not, you know, the internet. A lot of the internet is running off Linux servers. So yeah. I don't want to, you know, put myself in a pot of scalding.
Yes.
emails that'll be arriving, but I understand what she's saying as far as if you want to help the students out, give them the platform that everybody's using. Don't give them the platform that few people are using. But the question is, what's the platform we'll be using in the future when these kids are ready to get into the workforce? Which one's going to pay them better? Are they, to me is the question. You know, they talk about, there was an email, I don't know if it's true or not, but one of those chain emails that goes around that says that what the kids are learning in school today won't apply by the time they graduate. And it sounds like it makes sense to me. If it's not true, it certainly is believable. And I think that it's like learning a language. You could say, well, look, you need to teach them English because that's what everybody's speaking, okay? But, you know, Spanish could come in handy, especially if you live on the West Coast or, yep. You know, if you live in New York or Florida, any place where there's a large Latin immigration. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is, what's the harm? What's the harm if you learn English and Spanish? Now you're worth even more in the workplace. So if you know Linux and you know Windows, for example, as many people who do this for a living do, then that makes you worth more money. And the problem that I have with this particular person that claims to be a teacher is one of speaking with such a level of authority and conviction and has no idea what she's talking about. And it's frustrating to me because, well, for example, just last night, I went to a grocery store. I was buying groceries, and I put up a coupon. It was a printed home coupon. And I'll talk to this about this at Wednesday Madness tomorrow. And they refused to accept my coupon. They said, we do not accept internet coupons. And I said, no, wait a minute. This is I buy a lot of Coca-Cola, and the Coca-Cola all have these points that you can enter.
Right.
And then you use the points to buy product. I use it to print out coupons at home from the Coca-Cola website to buy more Coca-Cola product. Everybody has their vice. Some people smoke. Some people drink. I use
internet coupons all the time. They're accepted everywhere. Barnes & Noble, Bed Bath & Beyond.
I do recall there was a thing. A Shamrock Ice Cream Company had a website. You could click on a free coupon, and everybody emailed it to everybody. And it got out of control, okay? Because there was nothing to stop you from. It was basically like present this for one free quart of Shamrock ice cream.
Right.
And people copied it and emailed it to everybody, and they would go and print out the coupon five times and hit five different stores and get. Because there was nothing that prevented you from doing it twice. Well, these coupons from Coca-Cola are individually coded, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I said to the girl behind the counter, I said, can you get me your manager? So the manager comes out, and I said, I want to use this coupon. And she says, we don't accept internet coupons. And I said, do you know that is not your policy? She goes, no, it is our policy. I said, I am the customer, and I know the policy better than you do, and you are wrong. The Kroger Corporation, which owns this grocery store, must accept those coupons, or Coke will pull their product off the shelves if they don't. And I said, I will not argue with you. Refund the product, and I will handle this with the Kroger Corporation and the Coca-Cola Corporation tomorrow morning. And the next day I did, and was vindicated that I was absolutely right, and the employees were wrong, and they were going to straighten it out, right? So then I called the store on the phone, and I said, can I speak to a manager on duty? Yes. So I got a different person, and I said, listen, I've got a problem, but before I tell you what it is, can you answer a question for me? Do you accept printed home coupons? And she said, only if it's on a color printer. Oh, that's a new one. That's a new one. So these people speak with authority as though
they know what the
rules are. This is what it is, right? Now, I'm the customer.
Yeah.
I'm the customer. And I'm telling the person who works there, you're wrong. So I go back to the Kroger Corporation. I say, look, now I'm told this story. What's it going to take for everybody to be on the same page? They said, listen, we're going to call the director. They're going to make sure everybody knows what it is. And if you have any problem, feel free to print this email out and present it if you have any more problem in the future. And I said, look, if I have this problem in the future, I will print this email out. I will bring it with me, and I will show it to them. However, it is not my job to train your employees, and I will not shop there again. Okay, you want a pamphlet? Do you want to hand me out on other policies for your employees that you want me to train them while I'm there as well? I'm just done going grocery shopping, and you're acting as an obstacle in my path of getting that done by telling me rules that don't exist. And that's what this teacher was doing. This teacher was talking as though she has this authority or this knowledge that she knows for a fact.
Kerry, I've been in your shoes many times, but I'm just kind of curious in the scenario. Did you take it to the end? Did you get vindication? Did you go back to those people who were making up these rules on the fly and showed them and show them they were in fact wrong? Did you actually do that?
No.
You need to do
no.
that.
No. Well, what I did is I called the store. I asked the store manager over the phone. I said,
yeah.
"You are incorrect." I read her the email, mm-hmm. and she said she was going to go to the person that she gets their directions from,
mm-hmm.
and would call me back. Took my name and number, and I explained to her that. Mm-hmm. Where I live, there are 5 grocery stores,
mm-hmm.
and I drive past all of them to shop at her store.
Yeah.
Okay? And I do that because I enjoy that store. But mm-hmm. don't harass me over a coupon. It's just mm-hmm. silly for the amount of money that I spend. And this whole thing is, like, show it to me. Show me in writing. I shouldn't have to show you. Right? Yeah. This lady has no business. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And I'm not talking about the lady at the grocery store. I'm talking about this lady who wrote this letter. She overstepped her bounds.
Yes, she did.
That's why I say she's got to be an yeah. American, because I think only an American would have this attitude, this yeah. sense of entitlement, okay?
Right.
That, I've seen it so many times, Gary. You're right.
There are yeah. versions of Unix, or actually probably all of Unix, that is not free, but not Linux. And I think she's got right. them confused. And I think she'd have been better by stating, it is my understanding that this
well,
is this
even
way
if
and
she
this
had
is that
said
way.
Some, yeah, if she had couched it that way, I don't think there would have been the same reaction. And, you know, there's something in common between this particular situation and your situation with the coupons, and that is the coupon was printed on a home printer. And, you know, it might be a little bit suspect. Anybody can print, mm-hmm. you know, mock something up, and you've got to give them a little bit of leeway there for being.
They
suspicious.
Should have signage in the store
exactly.
if they're not
but
going
it,
to accept
and
them.
And if it's their policy to accept them, they need to accept them. I'm not arguing that.
The coupon has instructions on it to the retailer to verify its
right.
legitimacy.
Exactly. And, you know, the parallel with Linux is that many people download a Linux CD and burn it to, you know, a CD so that they can give it out, and they handwrite on it Ubuntu or OpenSUSE or
right.
Andriva or whatever it is, and you end up with a handwritten CD label, and it's a
yep.
little bit dodgy, you know.
Suspicious.
Exactly.
There's nothing dodgy about it. It's all on the up and up. It's just suspicious.
Yeah, sure. Well, sorry, I've been listening to a lot of UK podcasts lately. So. So, yes, it is a little bit suspicious. And, you know, for somebody who's not familiar with Linux, it might appear that somebody's trying to pull one over here. But with this lady, she says she tried Linux. And, you know, in the article, it says that some of the Linux community was a little bit suspicious whether this person was even a teacher. You know, maybe a shill for Microsoft just trying to stir up trouble. I don't think that's the case here. You know, a lot of teachers, although they're in a position of authority and although they're in charge of educating our children, will talk about the fact that we need to teach our students talents and skills that are useful for when they graduate, and so use that as an argument for teaching Microsoft Office as opposed to word processing. And, you know, we could talk a little more about that after the break, because I have
sure.
something to say on this.
All right. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bush, he joins us in this hour. It's all Linux. We'll return right after this. Stay with us. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy, just before the break, you wanted to make a point about that teachers what should be teaching how to use a category of software rather than a brand of software. Like, for example, you should be teaching word processing, not using Microsoft Word.
Right, that's exactly right. Students need to learn a skill, and the skill is not Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel.
Mm-hmm.
The skill is how to use a word processor or how to use a spreadsheet to do calculations or
right.
to balance a checkbook or whatever you might use it for. And so it doesn't matter which software you use. And in a school where budgets are tight and getting tighter and tighter, hardware is old because they aren't funded for new computers every year, or the most schools, if they have computers at all, aren't getting new hardware. They're getting hand-me-down hardware. So why wouldn't they take advantage of a free operating system? And if not a free operating system, at least open source software like OpenOffice versus paying for licenses for Microsoft Word and being forced to upgrade as new versions come out and old versions become obsolete.
I certainly can agree with you, you know, especially when it comes to school and you're dealing with budgets. My only concern about that the statement is that, as you know, if you're going to a company and you say, I'm checked out, they're going to ask you what word processor. Well, what word processor? They're going to want to know what you're checked out, because operating Microsoft Word is different than using another brand of word processor. You'll have some general concepts, but you won't know the commands.
Versions of Word. How about Word 2007 versus Word 2003?
And they might XP.
Exactly.
And they might want to know that on your resume. They say, well, you know, that was then. What do you know now? You know, because they want to...
Generally, if they're looking for something specific like that, they're usually looking for a particular feature of the product. Let's take Excel, for example. One of the things that a lot of employers are looking for when they're looking for somebody with Excel skills, other than clerical people who just need to be able to enter data into a spreadsheet and be familiar with it and be able to do a graph or two.
Designing them.
Most employers are looking for that visual basic for applications to be able to automate. They're looking for programming capability.
That's much more specific. Yeah,
That's exactly right. Yeah. And if you're looking for visual basic skills, then you've got to be with Microsoft for that, especially if you're looking for visual basic for applications, which is what's in the Office application. And unfortunately, OpenOffice's automation isn't at the same level of Visual Basic. I mean, there are plenty of better ways to automate a word processor or automate a generic spreadsheet application than to use Visual Basic from within the application.
It's a point well made.
Guys, we're out of time.
I was just going to say, we're just out of time. Exactly.
And listen, Larry, I want to thank you so much, because we won't see you till next year. We'll catch you in January. Have a happy New Year to you.
Have a happy holiday.
And a happy holidays to you. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. And good night now. And tomorrow night, it's Wednesday Madness. We're going to have our Malware Madness with Alex Eckelberry, the CEO of Sunbelt Software, talking about the latest virus and malware alerts. And then in hour two, Dick DiBartolo joins us, the GizWiz, talking about all the wild and crazy things and gadgets he finds on the internet. That's all coming up on tomorrow night's show. Boy, we're approaching the last show of the year. The 19th is going to be the last one. So hopefully you'll stick with us for the entire week. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you on Wednesday Madness tomorrow.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.